this has been a hell of a presidential race, you'd have to say. Joe Biden sort of threatening people to do push-up contests, lots of quirky one-liners, and some, you know, debates that are kind of like being hit with a wet sock. But these have all kind of taken a back seat since the COVID-19 pandemic has taken place. How hard has it been for leaders to keep their campaigns engaged when we're all keeping distant?
Well, very difficult. It's kind of really exacerbated the lead that Joe Biden got on Super Tuesday and then the subsequent elections after that. So it's really made it difficult for his rival, Bernie Sanders, to get any traction to come back, which was really unlikely. I mean, there's a big gap between the two of them. But even worse in some ways for the Democratic Party and for those opposed to Trump, there tends to be a focus on the leader effect. It's very hard to be in opposition, I think, in moments of crisis like World War II or the September 11 crisis in America, that those times people tend to want to hear from one voice. They don't want sort of alternate views. They want one response. And therefore, hearing from the Democratic Party in this time, particularly potential president, is just really drowned out by the overwhelming sort of, you know, power of the presidency. And then if you're not going to listen to Trump, and there's plenty of reasons not to listen to Trump because he's been a windbag and wrong on this COVID-19 quite often, you're going to listen to your state governor. So someone like Andrew Cuomo in New York has been doing really well in response. Governor Cuomo is responding to this as a result of, you know, the terrible problems in New York.
Yeah, as you say with Donald Trump, it's almost like being a wartime president. I think he's very unaware of how to respond to COVID-19, but he's very aware of how to frame himself as this wartime president now doing this kind of battle. It's interesting on two fronts because he's been very harshly criticized and he's been very conscious of things like the unemployment rates and the threat to the economy that COVID presents and the way that reflects badly on him. And yet at the same time, we've actually seen, at least according to Trump himself and a few outlets, a bump in the polls for him as well. Is Trump really hurting for his own re-election? I mean, how would he be feeling right now?
Well, you know, Trump has a tendency to think he's doing a fantastic job, I think, at all times. So there's sort of the self-delusion with Trump is, you know, as high as I think I can ever remember with any leader. But it's worth sort of thinking of the historical parallel of George W. Bush, that after September 11, 2001, he was the most sort of highly regarded president in approval rating in American history. His approval ratings were astronomical, you know, 90% almost of the country approving of the job he was doing. Now, he, in some ways, in the last 20 years or longer, is one of the worst presidents America has ever had. He went on to get reelected in 2004, and by the end of his presidency, his opinion ratings were down into the sort of 29s, very low, very unpopular, and a very poor record, I think, since the Iraq War, Katrina, the inequalities, the global financial crisis, you know, a very poor record. And I think there's some parallels there with Trump, that this event, many of us might think, well, Trump's sort of advice on COVID-19 has been appalling. But I think for many Americans, he presents as this constant sort of updating president. He's always there yabbering on about it. And for a lot of people, that is strangely reassuring. And this may help his re-election campaign. This may give some sense that, well, you know, Trump is still the master of the sort of the small box of television, of the visual, and that for enough people, there's a sense in some strange way that he's a reassuring figure just by the fact of his extreme confidence on these issues. Now, that might not be related too well to the facts, but, you know, you never get the sense with Trump that he's doubting himself, that he's, you know, that he's thinking that he doesn't have the best answers to the situation. This overconfidence is a problem in my view, but I think for many voters, that Trump's confidence is something. It's one of the reasons they tend to stick with him.
Indeed, one of the ones he's come out with lately is claiming that if America has up to 100,000 people die from COVID-19, that would be a pretty good result. That would be, all things considered, they're doing an excellent job of containing the situation. Now, anybody looking at that would say, that's insane. That is an insane number of people to claim that you needs to die for this situation to be resolved peacefully. But it's almost like going to the mechanic, and the mechanic tells you, well, this is going to take about a month's time, and it's going to cost X amount of dollars. So when you get it back in 2 weeks for half the price, you're really, really pleased with that situation. Would it be fair to say Trump is setting himself up to say, we didn't end up having 100,000 deaths because I have done such a tremendous, incredible, terrific, gobsmacking job?
Well, I think with Trump, that's one of the possibilities, that he wants to change the expectations and then obviously celebrate any success. I mean, if 200,000 people die, Trump will find a way of suggesting that he saved America from a greater calamity. But there have been figures put out by the chief sort of medical officers in the United States showing a potential death rate between 80 and 200,000. Now, that's remarkable. That's frightening. And I think these figures flying around Trump is in some ways this kind of, ADHD president who sort of gets some information and he suddenly blurts it back out. And often it's off Fox News that he sort of gets his, latest kind of conspiracy theory or understanding of the world. And then the next day it's out there in the world. And this, I think, is another example of this. These numbers are flying around at the moment. All of the reading I'm doing on the sort of U.S. situation is all about projections. How terrible is this going to get? And the numbers are incredibly frightening. So I think, from where we're standing with around 2,000 deaths already in the United States, it seems remarkable it could be 100,000, but I don't think that that's inconceivable either from what I've read so far. So, this is the sort of way Trump has kind of dealt with this issue, is to underplay it, say he's totally in control, it's no big deal, and then I think, events have caught up with him and how they play it and spin it to some extent. Regarding, it's got to tragic proportions already with a city like New York with about sort of 60,000 cases. So there's no keeping the lid on this. So it's going to be interesting over the next few weeks how Trump goes from this transition of, he's got it under control to, well, no, we haven't got it under control at all.
And in terms of Trump's omnipresence, I mean, one of the big lessons out of the 2016 election was just what an impact that omnipresence really had for Trump, controlling, as you say, the little box, the small screen in the form of television, and coming across as a very engaged candidate online as well. The Republicans didn't have much in the way of ground game for Trump, while Democrats put a lot of faith in ground game, and that obviously didn't end up panning out. Coming into the 2020 election, is it fair to say the Democrats haven't really learned the lesson, or at least aren't applying that lesson, when it comes to trying to engage more and more people in the digital arena?
Yes, that's a very good point. I mean, I think that the primary campaigns have been fought out online maybe more than we've ever seen. So the amount of traffic that I get in terms of tweets about all of the campaigns and their kind of attempts to sort of undermine each other with various ads that come out really sort of in a viral level more than a television sort of advertising campaign has been fascinating. So I think the Democrats have been trying to catch up. But one of the kind of big lessons that we learned from the 2016 election is that the Trump supporters were often willing to go to these kinds of dirty levels, or levels of basically lying about Hillary Clinton having a stroke, about Hillary Clinton being connected with pedophile rings, that these kind of just completely contrived stories were able to sort of reverberate around the internet very quickly without little control and ability to fact check them or anyone be a gatekeeper. And I think the Democrats, there is an equivalent in this campaign from the Democrats of claiming, Biden is senile, and there is a sort of, the sort of bar has got lower, I think, on the Democrat side. But I don't think the Democrats in the main election are likely to often go as low as Trump in terms of this just making up things, and Trump supporters making up even more things. And I think how you combat that is a real problem for democracy. There's no sort of simple solution to that, because when you've got one side having no real regard for facts and sort of an honesty, then the whole process of debating ideas really falls apart, and you're involved in the sort of politics of the lowest common denominator.
And just finally, Brendan, while I've got you, I mean, who is your money on for November 2020? Is it going to be President Biden or 4 more years of President Trump?
I think it's very, hard to call at this time. I mean, anyone who talks with great certainty this year, I think it's probably a fool or is well overconfident. Who was to predict that this was going to occur in terms of COVID-19 and disrupt the campaign? My sense is things are incredibly fluid. I think there's a big chance Trump can lose. I mean, he's got many weaknesses as a candidate. Those who are super confident they'll be re-elected, I don't know what basis that is on. The polling isn't great for him. But then again, the polling isn't sort of overwhelming for his opponent, who's likely to be Joe Biden. So it's going to be, I think, a brutal election once we come out of, hopefully, this, long period of illness and of this disease being around. So I'll just get a little bit of water. Very hard to predict. Very hard to predict election. And, hopefully we get back to campaigning and they were able to get back out there. So I think that's the thing to hopefully look forward to, a bit more of politics like we're used to in America with big rallies, and to think that campaigning can occur without that is, that makes it very hard to predict in terms of how you can build momentum and get people to focus on this election, and then the question of how people go to the polls itself. So with all of those things being up for sort of, speculation, speculating on the result, I think, is probably fairly foolish at this point in time when we can't even, hold with the elections themselves in terms of, the primaries continuing on at this point in time.
I couldn't agree with you more, Brendan. Anybody who tells you they know exactly what's going to happen next in this race is a liar. I do appreciate your time.
My pleasure.